Before we begin, Simon and I want to acknowledge that we're recording this from the land of the Bunurong people and the Yugambeh people of the Kulin Nations. We also have a special guest joining us, speaking from the land of the Ngunnawal and Ngambri people. We want to acknowledge and pay respects to their elders past and present, and extend that respect to any First Nations listeners.
Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Welcome back to Broadly Relevant.
I'm Simran Pasricha.
I'm Ryan Hamilton.
And this is a podcast for Bentown girlies trying to stay
broadly relevant. How you
hey.
Doing?
I'm doing grand. I'm still in the GC. I'm coming back tomorrow and I'm simply not excited, to be honest. I just love being slightly sweaty at all times. I really enjoy that feeling, to be honest.
I despise that feeling so profoundly to the extent that I left Queensland.
Yeah, I just feel like it's better for my skin. I don't know. And that's all that I want in my life.
No.
No?
Not for me.
Broadly News.
Well, to kick off the news segment, I have a tiny bit of funny news for you.
Go on.
Do you remember that fucking airline that opened called Bonza?
Yes.
Yeah, they're dead now.
No, I'm so upset. I'm so upset.
It was so funny. They were like, yeah, we're going to sell you a flight for $25 from Newcastle to the Gold Coast. And I'm like,
well, kudos for them for trying, to be honest. Kudos for them for trying, okay? I did buy a ticket from them, so I am upset about it. And look, I was ready for Bonza to take over, okay? Flights are so expensive right now. I was very hopeful, okay?
Yeah, but the Australian market is just not big enough, unfortunately.
I know, but their branding was purple, okay? And as a bygone, I was very much appreciated of that.
You know what? And I'll get Virgin to rebrand to purple just for you.
No, absolutely. Because Bonza going into liquidation is by erasure right there.
So have you seen like all the news with the college encampments in the US?
Yes, I have. And it's so great to see. They're everywhere.
Yeah, no, it's such a slay. Also popping up in Australia now, like Uni Melb's been having them. Monash has just started having one as of today, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, we're recording on Wednesday.
Yeah, and it's also just kind of exciting. Have you seen all the videos of, like, the fucking Zionists walking into the encampments and being like, oh, my God, everybody refuses to talk to me?
Yeah, specifically this one woman whose name is Montana Tucker. And, yeah, I will call you out. Sorry. But I think she's actually, like, an influencer, and she's gone in to the encampment site. And basically, she's, like, saying to the people on the encampment, you know, like, I just want to talk to somebody. I just want to talk to somebody. And they're like, okay, like, talk to our media liaison then, and you can talk to someone. Because she's come with a camera and, like, a mic and everything. So that is the natural thing to do, to just refer them to a media liaison. She has a full meltdown. She is the epitome of white woman tears, because she literally starts crying out of nowhere after they're so nice to her and just like refer her to a different area.
Well, it was insane because she was like, oh my God, like you guys like don't want to talk to me. And like, it's so scary how you're just standing there and not talking. And it's like, you're just scared of people with kifias.
Just if you want to say it, my God, it's so crazy. And they just had like masks on, so they were doing her a favor.
And then, you know, she was like, the media liaisons don't want to speak to me. And it's like, well, yeah, maybe they actually can see through your act. Anywho, I just find it funny how like both Zionist and white feminists make things about themselves in such a ridiculous way, you know?
It's so crazy because they also will be like the same people who to be like, you know, my like don't cross my boundaries, but then have like no idea what boundaries actually mean. And like, this is a moment where someone is setting that boundary, like go speak to the media liaison. Oh, don't want to speak. Like if they don't want to speak to you, they don't want to speak to you. And that's right. Like,
and then suddenly their boundary is like, my boundary is that people have to speak to me. And it's like, your boundary doesn't affect anyone other than you.
So very, very confusing. It is not surprising, though, that white women tears, you know, are like more on the forefront of the whole like Palestine-Israel situation, though. I feel like white women tears are every single different forms of, you know, movement to justice and liberation.
It's a strong currency.
Slightly uncomfortable. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think the one thing that like has most impressed me about all these encampments, though, is how organized they are, like,
absolutely,
you know, like media liaisons and like having like departments and everyone knows how everything works. And I'm just like, I love this, both from like a nerdy perspective and also like, that's how you do it.
Yeah, they even have like little encampment like bookshelves and like library meetings, and you know, there
I saw the library,
and like book clubs, so they get to like speak about Palestinian literature and learn more about the liberation movement. I think it's really incredibly done and really shows how much we all care, honestly. Yeah. And God, I wish that people would start caring, like the rest of the world would start caring more.
I think what I love the most is like how, because have you seen the videos of like, you know, people sharing like Indian dancing and then Palestinian dancing and
yeah.
like that cross-cultural exchange? I love it because they're kind of like acting out this like utopian world that we all want to live in and building it. Because like, you know, you see it there, you've built it there. If it's possible on the lawn at Columbia University, it's possible anywhere. And I think that's absolutely. So exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially like these like really big prestigious schools. Like it's kind of incredible to see so many people taking a stand there. And honestly, like, it's not an easy thing to do, right? Like, a lot of people have been getting notice that they are being, like, suspended or expelled. And a lot of it is happening, like, during their, like, finals week. And, like, to see the sacrifice, that's, like, incredible. In other news, over this past weekend, there was the National Rally Against Violence. And it was incredible to see so many people show up at each different city and state rallies to support women and men who have experienced violence in their lives. The rally actually made 5 demands, and it was organized by an organization called What Were You Wearing? And it made the demands of wanting the federal government to declare violence against women as a national emergency, regulations on how the media reports on victims, mandatory victim blaming, prevention training for frontline workers, creation of alternative reporting pathways and specialist courts for domestic and family violence, and sustainable funding for organizations working in violence prevention and victim support. I attended the Gold Coast rally, and I talked a little bit about it on my TikTok. But basically, it was interesting because it was a very white rally, and there was a lot happening at different rallies that were kind of disappointing. The Sydney one had, you know, Channel 7 News, like with a mic up front, listening to speakers and like producing that for their show, which was, you know, a little hypocritical as they supported the lifestyle of a rapist.
Well,
and yeah, and at the Canberra rally, a lot of interesting tea went down and really disturbing support, if you can call it that, from the Prime Minister of Australia. And we have a special guest to let us know more. Should we invite her on?
Let's bring her on.
Welcome in, Enya. Yay!
Hi. So Enya, what's the mood like on the ground there?
Currently mood is a little bit different to Sunday. Sunday was a bit rough. Starting from the very beginning, I rocked up with some of my friends, fully anticipating that this was going to be a really small thing. As someone who's gone to a lot of Invasion Day rallies in Canberra with Ryan, as Ryan knows, on Ngunnawal country, Invasion Day is like probably the biggest turnout that we get for people in terms of activism. And this rally on Sunday was probably 1.5 times bigger. Like, it was really, really big. I was actually really, really shocked. You would not see a single unaccompanied man, however. Every man that was there clearly had like a wife or a girlfriend. God bless. I guess that's their activism done for the
God bless America. Tick
that box. But yeah, it was a really, really white audience, like notably white, notably like tattooedless, notably people with children. Lots of kids.
No tattoos.
Like people were not, there was not a lot of colored hair. There was not a lot of piercings. There's not a lot of tattoos in comparison to like a Palestine rally. And
the gays and theys did not show up.
No.
Well, but didn't you have a similar experience in the Gold Coast, Simran?
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of white people. Yeah. A lot of white people on the Gold Coast.
Yeah. Also the Gold Coast, yeah.
Yeah, it was on the Gold Coast. And I like made like a video, like a rant about it. And then I was like, oh, it is the Gold Coast. But there were a lot of white people, which is obviously terrible. And like, it is about violence in general. And violence really does a number on marginalized groups, including immigrant and refugee groups. So yeah, it was very concerning to see that because it's supposed to be like a safe space. But then I feel like people like forget about the fact that, you know, yes, it's a safe space, good, tick and done. But like, you actually have to like reach out to these communities to let them know that it is in fact a safe space, you know, like, and prove that in an ongoing matter, like not just like one day. And I think that's like very same energy as Albo was giving. It was like, oh, tick and done, which I'd love to hear more about. Like, what was the vibe?
Yeah.
Like when you were hearing his speech, like what, like did you like see him come in? Like, was there a lot of interaction happening before like speaking?
So I fully didn't realize that he was going to be there. I rocked up, like I said, expecting it to be like kind of a small thing, like very grassroots. Like I knew the organizer, I'd followed the organizer for a couple of years on TikTok and Instagram. And yeah, I was very surprised that there were so many people. I was so surprised that there was so much media. And that was initially what ticked me off, that I was like, this is not like a regular thing. there was so much media. I do not see that much media at any Palestine rallies that I go to. I didn't see any media like that at any of the Invasion Day rallies that you go to. And then I double checked their Instagram stories and they had posted saying Albo was going to be there. And that's when I went, oh, well, it all makes sense now. Oh, it's a photo op. I get it. And I have seen photos in hindsight, obviously a couple of days later, I've seen photos of him at the march. He was at the very front. And I imagine there's like security reasons he can't be in the middle of the crowd. But he and Katie Gallagher, federal minister for women. And yeah, they were at the very, very front. So I didn't see them. When it came time to actually rocking up to the front of parliament on the grass, we all sort of sat down. I was probably about 15 meters away from where the speaker, Sarah Williams, was. So it was myself and some friends, and there were quite a few people. And the mood was very much mourning. Like, people were mourning the loss of, at the time it was 32 women, now it's 36 women as of today. People were grieving, and the energy was very much like, we're not here respectfully to fuck spiders. Like, we're here to like be angry. We're at the front of parliament. Parliament was empty. It's a Sunday. Nobody was sitting, but it was very like the symbolism of the house. And so Tony Albo, whatever his name is.
Same. He was white name. Yeah.
Anthony Michael, who cares, was off to the side and was not visible to the crowd. So he was in proximity to the speaker, but quite off to the side, had his security, had his advisors, had Katie Gallagher. So we couldn't see him. So most of the time that Sarah Williams was addressing him, asking him to sort of thumbs up, thumb down, so no response to her demands. And her demands were pretty reasonable. Like, I don't think she was exactly asking him to get up on a pedestal and like make himself personally vulnerable or anything like that. We couldn't see him. So what we could figure out from what was going on was basically her saying, oh, Albo's declined to respond. Katie Gallagher's declined to respond. Nobody's giving us anything. And he was getting heckled. If I'm perfectly honest, people were yelling at him, why are you here? People were yelling at him, boo, shame, like the whole zhuzh. And to be honest, I don't feel like it was a lot more than what he would anticipate at any other thing he shows up to. Like, his life wasn't in danger. He wasn't threatened by any means. Everyone was still seated. And there was a clear sort of moment where Sarah Williams, and I don't know if this is recorded anywhere, but Sarah Williams was sort of saying, you know, I grew up in a very pro-Labor household where we were a very pro-Labor family, but the way that this government is responding to this is not giving me good vibes. And there was also the Canberra Greens minister, senator, she was there, Emma something, don't fact check me, who was
not a
very
involved. Not a fact-checking podcast.
Not a fact-checking podcast. Journalist, not a fact-checking podcast. she was in on it. She said, I absolutely agree to these demands. I fully see what you guys are saying. I fully hear you. And yeah, Albo was giving nothing. So he was getting heckled. There was a bit of smack talking about his government and about his party while we were there. And like, let's be honest, most of the people that come to these sort of events, they're going to be greenies. They're not going to be liberals. If anything, the liberals maybe would chop to this one because it's very just like, it's easy to agree that maybe women shouldn't be murdered. It was very quick. Like, it was very like, oh, Albo and Katie are not going to speak. And then he was just crossing the lawn. He was just moving. And it was him and like seven people all moving. And like, you can assume security teams, political advisors, you know, your interns, whatever. And they were just moving and didn't seem planned at all. And then Sarah can hear that like the audience is having a bit of a go, and clearly there's like lots of people moving in the background behind her because, you know, the Prime Minister can't move anywhere without there being a bunch of people. So she sort of says to the audience, let's give everybody 10 minutes to just chill and then we can decide if we want to hear from him. And for me being 15 meters away, I went, okay, well, like, everybody's going to chill and we're going to wait 10 minutes to see if anybody wants to hear from him. And then he's immediately got the microphone. Well, I thought it was really weird that the Prime Minister started off by saying, we wanted to speak, but we were actually told we couldn't speak. I thought it was really petty. I was like, why is the Prime Minister giving school
wild.
Year?
So bizarre. Like, it was so bizarre. It was bizarre. Giving high school. Yeah.
It's giving Kanye. It's giving, excuse me, 23-year-old, woman of color, I'm going to come up and just co-op for a real second because I've got something important to say, which I didn't think he had anything important to say, I'll be honest. But yeah, so then there's a kerfuffle in the front and Sarah Williams crying. And I was kind of like, you know, she's 23. She has worked unfunded for hours, for years, organizing this movement, putting all of the work into this movement. And then the Prime Minister's just come up and been petty. and there's a lot of media and there's a lot of tension. So she starts crying and the other organizers from What Were You Wearing start rallying around her, comforting her, and the media is right up in her face, like cameras right up in her face as she's crying. And so naturally, we're all sort of like, I would burst into tears too. To be honest, if I was telling thousands of people my story about, you know, domestic violence, sexual assault, and my experiences with the police and like going forward and like, you know, trying to reform New South Wales police, I would start crying too. And so Albo starts like listing off all of the good things that his government has done, which was really interesting. Without giving too much away, I had people who were there with me who work for the government, who work in areas adjacent to the allegedly things that Albo was talking about. Allegedly, the numbers allegedly that Albo were giving out were not fully operational at the time of speaking. So
allegedly.
So the tone for myself and the other people that were there was very,
So we're just saying things now.
Yeah, I was like, Yeah, and so my friend who allegedly works in areas somewhat adjacent to the things that Albo was allegedly talking about, she was very upset. She was very like, this feels a little bit poppycock, to be honest.
Well.
And the crowd, to be fair, was not having any of his like, we've got so many numbers of people and we've done so much with this and this. The crowd was not buying it because clearly what has been implemented or what they're attempting to implement is not giving. It's not saving lives. It's not making a difference. And we proceeded to hear from a bunch of speakers from like the Domestic Violence Crisis Centre in Canberra. You know, there's an organisation that I'm forgetting the name of now that like specifically men will come to ask for help because they can recognise their own mental health and recognise their own violent tendencies. They have a waiting list of like 70 men. Like these organisations came up and said, like, we have no funding. We do all of this on our own. And for Albo to go up and sort of give his numbers and like pat his government on the back was pretty insulting and people were not having it. The only times that he did get a cheer from the crowd, which I note that the ABC did say that, oh, Albo was getting booed, but then by the end of it, the crowd was cheering with him. The only time the crowd cheered at what he had to say was truly when he acknowledged that domestic violence and gender-based violence in Australia was a cultural problem, not just a women's problem. Otherwise, he was not getting wiggle room from the crowd at all. So I found that really irritating to read that in the news later and to be like, oh, I guess it doesn't really matter what any of us think or say, because as long as he gets up, someone's always going to have a spin, which was really, really disappointing because we walked back from Parliament, back to Commonwealth Park in Canberra, and the vibe was flat. Like we had had a minute of silence for all the women that had died. We were very much like in mourning. And so it was very upsetting for the like spin to be Albo's holding hands with kids walking down to like say no to violence when it didn't feel like that.
You see that from a lot of local MPs, but then to like see it from like literally what is supposed to be the leader of our country, like what do you mean? This is like up to
you. I missed the best part where Sarah Williams, who was the speaker, who was the organizer of the rally, who was the organizer of the foundation, she said that she had reached out to Albo's office and she'd reached out to Katie Gallagher's office and Katie Gallagher had said she would speak and Albo's office said he declined to speak but he was going to be present at the rally. So when he got up and he said, we wanted to speak but we were told we couldn't, she then turned around and said, that's a lie. That's a lie. And all the organisers go, and she did drop
receipts.
That's a lie. And she's dropped the receipts, which I thought would have been a bit like sketchy how you're doing cabinet in confidence or whatever, but like good for her. And he lied. He made this whole event about himself. All the media was there for him. The media was there not to really cover gender-based violence. He pushed his way in and he screamed, I am the leader of this country. I will speak. When she asked if we needed 10 minutes before he was allowed to speak, he bullied his way in. He pushed her out of the way. He basically, allegedly, accused her of lying. So like, I don't know, choices. Choices about decentering yourself. And I guess it must be really hard when you're the leader of this country to decenter yourself because everything is about him all the time. But it was just left a bad taste in everyone's mouths.
Of course, after the fact, he said he was going to have like a cabinet meeting on Wednesday. And we are recording this on Wednesday. And he has literally been speaking while we were speaking. So he's announced a $925 million program over 5 years called the Leaving Violence Program, which will allow those escaping violence to receive financial support, safety assessments, and referrals to support pathways. And those eligible will be able to access up to $5,000 in financial support. He's also spoken about like deep fake online pornography, and he's like, we should make that illegal. And I'm like, well, Diva,
totally.
Obviously. Yeah. Government to bring forward, and this will be good for you, Simran, government to bring forward legislation outlawing doxing.
Famously, I have been doxed, allegedly.
No, but I kind of hate all this because everything like has a little buzzword name. Like, so he's announced a suite of online measures to combat male extremist views about women online. So the legislation about deepfake pornography. And then also a new phase of the Stop It at the Start program, which will counter-influence misogyny online. What?
Wow, they're going to get bullied. I know that there's going to be a 13-year-old girl sitting there bullying the absolute shit out of the AI chatbot that they implement for that.
No, absolutely.
Other news that came out today, relevant, the Greens said they want violence against women declared a national emergency, which ooh, I feel like
I will
it
say,
is.
So. Albo did address the term emergency when he was speaking, not to give him credit for anything, blah, 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 but like I'm going to give him credit for this. He did say... Don't make me a male sympathizer. He did say that that he wasn't going to declare gender-based violence a national emergency because the term emergency is used in parliamentary proceedings and stuff for like 3 months worth of like emergency funding. So say you have a flood or a fire, you declare, for instance, because you're both there, Victoria is an emergency zone due to bushfires. That is a concerted short burst of attention and funding that goes into something and then, you know, sort of subsides when the emergency is resolved. But he said that he felt like gender-based violence doesn't classify as an emergency, allegedly, because it is a long-term cultural, intergenerational, blah, 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 that needs to be addressed, was what he said.
Look, I mean, he is certainly talking the talk, but he's also said a lot of dumb shit. So that's where I stand.
I'm very skeptical because I know that, like, these big promises are made by one government and then another government comes in and then they make their promises, and sometimes their promises overlap, sometimes their promises are in direct conflict, and a promise is not actual action.
I just don't think government is, you know, our liberation, you know?
I agree.
Dang.
Allegedly.
Well, that's nice and depressing, but I'm so glad that you were here to tell us all about it.
Thank you so much for reporting live from the field, Enya, and thanks for providing, you know, the perspective from what it's like in Canberra at the moment. So I've been seeing a lot of Malala on my TikTok recently.
Oh, yes. Tell me more.
Because, so she's co-producing a musical with Hillary Clinton in New York. Mm-hmm. And the musical is called Suffs, and it, like, Suffs is in suffragettes, and it's about the American history of the suffragettes and women's liberation in America.
That is so random of Malala to do that.
Well, so I've read the backstory, and essentially the writer was like, Hillary Clinton, do you want to help out? And Hillary was like, absolutely. Let me call Malala for some reason.
Why don't you just call Malala up?
And Malala was like, yeah, absolutely, I'll do that. But, and so now there's been a lot of like backlash against Malala on TikTok because everyone's like, oh, that's so weird of you to align yourself with Hillary Clinton so like excessively. Because, you know, a lot of people don't see Hillary as the radical vanguard of feminism. You know, they see her as like someone who upholds the status quo. And so people are critiquing Malala for that because that kind of comes up against the idea of what we have in the West of what Malala is and means.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, Hillary Clinton literally said that she argued against a full ceasefire between Israel and Palestine, which is like so bizarre. And then Malala comes out and says, you know, like, after people like condemned her for being associated with Hillary, working on something together with Hillary, Malala comes out and says, you know, that she will continue to condemn the Israeli government for its violations of international law and war crimes. And I applaud efforts by those determined to hold them to account. Where are you holding them account to, though? You know what I mean? Like, I think it would make a lot of, it would like hold a lot of weight if her actions backed up her words, you know, and like if she really did condemn the people who, these like big political figures that are saying no to ceasefire, which is a wild take. It's a crazy take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely bizarre. And it's a bit of a slap in the face, to be honest.
But then because I was watching that, I kept seeing more TikToks, which were like critiquing Malala from like Pakistani voices or like Pakistani American voices. Turns out she's a very contested figure in Pakistan. Mm. I had no clue, but that actually makes a lot of sense. And so there's this excellent article from Al Jazeera, which I've just read, which kind of like unpacks why there's so much controversy surrounding her in Pakistan. And it kind of centers on the way that like the story of Malala as like an idea is a story of someone who defied, and this is a quote, someone who defied the cultural logics operating in Pakistan and who now embodies a transnational secular modernity. Instead of being a symbol of the courage of Muslims and Pakistanis to stand up against violence, Malala is shown to be an exception. And so there's, I think, this kind of valid critique of her because in sort of the individualistic story that we tell about her, you know, that story suggests something different about the culture where she comes from and puts her as the exception rather than a pattern of resistance, if that makes sense. Mm. Which is, I think, a really interesting critique.
Agreed. No notes on that, to be honest. No notes. Malala, yeah. You're an artist.
But really funny because we have a friend who went to uni with her, so that's like...
Yeah, I know. And that's my favorite fun fact. It is so bizarre. I think about that maybe once a week. I remember like when she was like applying to the uni and was like upset because she knew that Malala was also applying to the uni. And she's like, what's the point of me applying? And I so feel that. Yeah.
They went to the same college. Like they were in some group chats together and stuff.
Yeah, no, they were definitely in some group chats together and like Facebook pages. It might have just been like orientation week group chats, but it happened. Oh, in other maybe problematic cultural news, the Met Gala is coming up.
Oh, well, yes. How are we feeling about it?
You know, fine, I guess. Look, I'm not gonna lie, I devoured those outfits that we see from the Met Gala.
We have had a bad run of themes.
We have Karl Lagerfeld, come on. Like, that's when I was like, oh, we're just, like, outwardly being problematic. We're not even, like, trying to, like, hide it anymore. This year's theme, though, is Sleeping Beauty's Reawakening Fashion, which...
Look, if they do it well, it will be brilliant.
Totally. And I think very great timing. Wow, that's a great take. Yeah.
If it's good, it's good.
But yeah, any predictions for the Met Gala?
I want Rihanna to come back wearing Guope. That's all I want. It's not going to happen, absolutely. But I want it.
My prediction is that Rihanna will be late again. And I think...
Wow.
I think it's a pretty darn good prediction, to be honest.
I could also do with some Lady Gaga. I hope Chapel Roan is coming and I hope she has her moment.
She won't, though, and I'll be so upset about it.
Yeah.
Because I don't see Anna Wintour listening to Good Luck, Babe. Sorry, I don't. And that's really upsetting. Okay.
But if all those stupid fucking influencers can go to the Met Gala, Chapel Roan can come.
I know. But I think they're, like, actually, like, scarred from that time. Because now, like, they really don't invite a lot of influencers. Like, what's over? Like, Emma Chamberlain's kind of the only one. It's because,
like, Instagram buys a table and then just sends some influencers.
True. And interestingly enough, today's, like, this year's media sponsor is no longer going to be YouTube. It's now TikTok this year. Oh. So I, like, wonder if we'll see more TikTokers.
That's fun. They're really rooting to not get canceled.
Yeah, TikTok, absolutely. This is their play, which is part of them, to be honest. On the topic of TikTok, there has also been the trend. It's resurfaced a little bit. I feel like a couple months ago this was going around, but it came back around, especially to do with the national rally against violence. But it's the question people are asking is, would you rather be stuck on like a deserted island with a bear or a man? What's your answer?
What sort of man?
No, just go with what you need to.
Okay.
No, just bear or man. Don't ruin the question. Just bear.
This is the wrong answer culturally, but I am going to say man.
Okay. And that says a lot. My answer, no doubt, in my mind, is bear.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I could be friends with the bear, I feel. And couldn't be friends with a man, though. That's for sure. Man can absolutely turn on you, and I would be very scared if I was with a man.
Look, if it's a straight man, I definitely would be considering the bear. But, you know, what if he's the love of my life?
True, and that's tea. There's not much else to say about the trend, but people on TikTok, men on TikTok specifically, are getting really up in arms about women saying that they choose a bear rather than a man. And they're, like, all mansplaining, being like, you don't understand how serious, like, a bear attack is going to be. And, like, you haven't watched enough nature documentaries. And I still, every time, I would rather be with the bear on the island. And it's like, people don't understand. One TikToker was like, oh, don't you understand that we are afraid of men all the time? And a guy was like, how could you be afraid of a man all the time? And it's like, yes, we are though. Like, I 100% of the time, I am afraid of a man. And that's like, it's just a fact. It's just bizarre that I guess like this is like another case of like, oh, sometimes a little, you know, like feminism online, there's a lot of different like factors and variables that like come into it. It's interesting, like, it's good that it started this conversation, but it's very revealing to see how much men don't listen to us when we say that we're afraid of them, you know?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, profound. That's the tea.
Well, look, I think as well, it depends on the type of bear, you know? A black bear, 100%. A brown bear, no, you know?
No. Mm-hmm.
I actually like was taught in school like what bears to avoid and what bears are fine.
Is this in Canada?
Yeah, it's like a whole thing. They're like, like if it's black, you're fine. If it's brown, get the fuck out of there.
Oh, so they're racist. But
if it's white, I think you should be really concerned, actually.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And same. And I feel the same way.
Like actually, the only safe bears I think are black bears. So
true. Wow.
Yeah.
So they woke. Yeah.
So, what's the topic of today, Simran?
Feminism. Well, more specifically, microfeminism. There is a TikTok trend going around where people are sharing how they implement microfeminism in their everyday. A couple examples are women who don't hold the door open for men, but will hold the door open for women, which I love. There was like one lady who was like, oh, whenever anybody like comes over, to like their house like and like visits with their kids like with their babies, they'll take the baby like and like hold it and like play with it and then hand it back to the dad as opposed to the mom. Yeah, so that's the tea. Do you do any microfeminism in your day-to-day? And yeah, okay. The woman.
I mean, I feel like I do a lot of macro feminism. I don't know if I do a lot of micro feminism. I think the most of the examples given are like very much what I do in my life. I love not holding a door open for a man. I love not letting a man go in front of me or not moving out of the way if a man is walking down a hallway. I also love if a woman is in a meeting, which is great because my team is almost entirely women. We have one male intern and one male full-timer. And if any woman gets cut off, I am immediately like, what were you saying, Nicole? Always bring it back. Always bring it back. You know, sometimes
so just be I a feel good like person
I,
overall.
Yeah, just trying to be a good person. I do feel like sometimes I lean towards maybe a little bit more of the like, hate to say the M word, misandry, where I'm a little bit like, obviously what she has to say is more important than what you have to say. Obviously she deserves to have the door held open for her more because she's carrying more weight emotionally, physically, psychologically. Like, yeah, I'm going to be nicer to her because I know that it's exhausting living this life. And I know categorically, scientifically, empirically, that the man is probably living an easier life. So you can
open
the door for yourself.
Yeah. What is your microfeminism that you take in your days, Ryan?
I actually didn't prep for this, so I'm panicking.
Just think of one.
I feel like I try to be conscious with my language and like I try not to use the B slur, you know, and I'm like normalizing calling people cocks and dicks.
So true. Totally. I'm never calling a woman the B slur or the C slur.
But unfortunately, I do like Drag Race has ruined the word cunt for me. You know, when things serve cunt, I'm like, yeah, that's good. You know?
Yeah, I was fully against that word, like really intensely. In fact, our speech and drama teacher told me that's the worst word you could ever use against a woman. And I was like, yeah, good, same. And it felt really unnatural to like coming out of my mouth. But then I moved to Melbourne and I started saying it.
Is it like we both moved out away from a very insular, posh private school environment and realized that people use language however they see fit and it's actually not a mark of classism or like intelligence levels?
Well, yes. Yeah. No, because like, you know how the stereotype of Australians is that everyone says the C word all the time? I would like read that online and I'm like, no, we don't. But that was definitely our upbringing.
So of course you can say cunt, Ryan. Okay.
I'm normalizing it.
Oh my God, that felt crazy saying that in my family home. I'm so scared that someone has just heard me.
That's why I very much default to like charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
What I need to self-censor.
You see you next Tuesday, the straight way of saying charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent.
It must be.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. I think it's like really nice to see like women collectively like speak about shared experiences and like workplaces and like in their homes and, you know, that we're all kind of like in on this joke. But I think the framing of it, like the fact that it's a joke, it's like not, you know, like feminism very real.
Unless it's a joke, I feel like people won't pick it up and it won't take steam. Like we have to.
True.
We have to do a bear versus a man, because otherwise people won't take you seriously when you say, I do feel threatened by a man. People don't take you seriously when you say, I do prioritize women in my life, because then they have a tantrum about it. So if you make it as a joke, then it definitely lessens the seriousness of like the sharp edge of it.
But
which
I'm
is
like,
quite sad.
Let's be sharp, you know? Like, so I've Googled microfeminism and some other keywords to get the headlines that I wanted.
Yeah. Right.
But like, right, so here's one description, one headline. Microfeminism, a quiet middle finger to the man. Why is that good? You know, like,
because it's not always safe to give a loud middle finger.
That's a good point.
I agree with you. And thank you for saying that. So, because I needed to think about that. I think I forget sometimes because I don't like interact with a lot of people. So therefore, I'm like in my bubble sometimes. I feel like just this week, I've just been in my bubble. And that's like really bad. And that's a terrible thing for me to say. But sometimes I feel safe with the people around me. And I forget that I'm actually not. It doesn't happen often, but this week it happened. For these hours in the morning, I felt like I was safe in my home just because I'm just with my dog and I haven't interacted with anybody else. But I think that's a distraction in the way that like macrofeminism is like also a little bit of like a distraction on like the overall goals of like feminist liberation, just in the context of like this trend happening now, whilst we're also looking, you know, talking about like women being murdered and, you know, two women being murdered today, like in the last 24 hours. Like it feels a little bit like distractionary, you know, but at the same time, I totally get what you're saying, because it's not like we have like the privilege to be so have so many edges with what we say, and like it's sort of like a starting point. Kind of like reminds me of like the Barbie movie of it all, if that makes sense. People really hate it on the Barbie movie, but
so
I think it served a purpose, you know.
I guess it's like what feminism is worth more value than other feminism, like which feminists matter
but
more.
It's I think it's also like, you know, like sure, let's, and like, you know, if you are slay into microfeminism, who am I to critique that? But it's also like, yeah, that is the struggle we can have later once the other issues are resolved, you know? Like, I think it would be ridiculous if, like, in the 1980s when, like, you know, queers were dying of AIDS, if everyone was like, oh my God, you assumed I had a girlfriend. Like, that's not the issue at that point, you know?
Yeah, totally.
There's
understand.
A bigger issue at hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
You have to have women alive in order to be able to center them in conversations.
Exactly.
Exactly. So real for that.
And that's the episode.
I'm hearing it. Try not to murder if you can. I don't know.
Yes. I'm like very like interested in the way that this conversation is like moving, because one of the points that I had in my head was like, oh, I feel when we focus on these like trends when it comes to feminism specifically, online, feminism's not a trend, but you know, in this context it is.
Sure. Yeah.
I think it's one of my points was that sometimes it deepens fragmentation in the feminist movement as well, because it kind of isolates like certain people and like where they're at with their own feminism. It's a hard one because balancing the individual feminist journey as part of like the collective feminist journey, I find like I struggle with that a lot sometimes, because sometimes I do get upset at like when people are just, you know, girl bossing around.
Derogatory reference. Yeah.
Yes. But at the same time, it's like their own journey. And I obviously, like, you know, you continue to like hope that that person is seeking like a deeper understanding of feminism. Gross. And like the movement. Yeah. But it's like, how do you, I guess, take a step back from it and like let them do their own thing whilst also moving the movement forward?
Can I take that question on notice? Can I get my advice to write a little something, something?
I feel like maybe like another critique of microfeminism is that, because like part of what's exciting about like liberation and the work of liberation and like all that is that it forces us to imagine and dream about a better world, right? And within the broad umbrella of feminism, there's like a lot of discussions of like, what is the world that we want to live in? You know, like, are we eco-feminists? Are we like the ones where we literally, you know, want to kill all men like Valerie Solanas? And so like, I feel like, you know, when we focus on like microfeminism, it's like, okay, sure, we can all agree that we should like close the doors on men. But that's, you know, us avoiding the discussion of what is the world we want to live in. Because like, you know, J.K. Rowling calls herself a feminist. I don't want to live in a world that she's fighting for. And
facts.
She would probably also agree that, yeah, microfeminism is a slay. And it feels like this sort of like, yeah, we could all make peace with it. But like the work of feminism is not peaceful. And that's what I don't like. Oh, that was a very, that was a take.
That was profound.
Profound.
That was a take.
Anywho, how about y'all?
It's just kind of scary to have these takes because I don't want to push anybody out of feminism.
I do kind of feel like if you're someone who is compelled to make a difference, like you are compelled to move forward naturally. Like, I don't know. I think if your feminism stops at like the Me Too movement in like 2017 and that's like as far as you're willing to go and like, oh, raping women is bad. Like, yes, we knew that. We do know that. Like, there's the things you learn in kindergarten. It's like, don't talk to strangers, share your toys, don't rape women. Like, let's move on now. Like, if you are going to progress and grow as an adult, your feminism progresses and grows with you, or else it's all stuck in like an immature phase of feminism. And so, like, I understand that everybody educates themselves and grows at different rates. Like, you know, that's their journey. But like, I do feel like if you're true and you're like passionate, then you will get there eventually. And if you don't, then that's on you. That's only a reflection of the person that's not moving forward.
Mm. How does the collective and like community play into that, I guess?
Well, I think it's about the people that you're around. Like if you're someone whose feminism is very like white feminism, very 2010s, I don't think you're someone who is around people who are radical or people who are willing to put a community first over individualism. I'd like to think that the more people there are that are radical begets more radical people.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. Radicalization radicalizes.
Famously.
You love a little quippy little...
a little pithy remark.
A little pithy remark. There we go. Yeah. Quippy is not a word. Yeah.
Delicious.
I have nothing to add except, wow, white feminism. That one white feminist we all know.
Yuck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And his. Boo and
I just
want
to say that whole thing that I just said wasn't necessarily a subtweet, but it does apply.
I was reading it as a subtweet, so.
Well, maybe it is a subtweet totally. Now.
Dear listener, you're getting no context, so I hope you have a great day. Final remarks on the future of feminism.
The future is bright. The future is bright.
I love the optimism.
A lot of faith in Gen Z, to be honest. I do.
Me too. Oh my God.
Same.
Well, you know, as we've just talked about on the podcast, which you haven't heard it yet, Anya, you know, the encampments are so cool.
Mm. Well, there's one literally right across the road from me right now. And I think they're doing great. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm not going to specify exactly where I am, but like, don't want to dox myself.
No doxing.
But
yeah.
And I have a lot of faith for them. I think they're in a position where they have, I think it was the Prime Minister of Malaysia was there not that long ago. And they, you know, they were saying the things, they were doing the things that they wanted to do. And I can only support them. I think they're really turning up and it makes me proud of them.
Yeah. That's such a slay. Yeah. Look, if you are calling yourself a feminist, go to a Palestine watch. That's all I'm saying. Right?
Oh, yeah. If you're a feminist, you have to care about the brown women as well. Sorry. Hate to say it, but
absolutely.
You have to care about brown people.
I know.
Yeah,
so
if
hard.
You don't want women to be killed, you don't want them to be killed in Palestine.
Yes, absolutely. Amen to that. And I think that wraps it up perfectly.
Today's checkout question is, name a woman.
Name a woman, I dare you.
If you love women so much, name one woman. I was going to say Genevieve Bell, who is the Deputy Vice Chancellor of the ANU, only because I had ANU on mind. I don't respect her that much, I'll be honest. But purely because I was just thinking about university encampments, I was thinking about that.
Well, did she the fucking Chancellor of Columbia when they were like, we're not going to divest? And I'm like, Diva, perhaps you should.
Anyway. We're going to make it easier for students to be able to access a list of the criminals that we invest in. And that's on Columbia.
My woman is Anne Bogart, who is a feminist theater director who teaches at Columbia. So I've been thinking about her too.
Totally. Mine's Michelle. Just Michelle.
All Michelles. Any woman named
Michelle.
All Michelles
that I've interacted with, I've actually really had a good time with.
Well, thank you so much for listening. This has been Broadly Relevant.
If you like the episode, we'd love for you to tell a friend or leave a review.
Bye.
Okay, bye.